Lost and Sound is proudly sponsored by Audio-Technica. Audio-Technica are a global but still family-run company that make headphones, turntables, cartridges, microphones, studio-quality, yet affordable products because they believe that high-quality audio should be accessible to all. So wherever you are in the world, head on over to audiotechnica.com to check out all of their range of stuff. Welcome to Lost and Sound. I'm Paul Hamford. I'm your host. I'm a writer and author based in Berlin, where I'm speaking to you now from. And this is the show where each episode I have conversations with the musical innovators, the outsiders, the mavericks, the artists that do their own unique thing. And we talk about music, creativity, life, the things that inspire us to make the things that we make. Previous guests have included Peaches, Suzanne Chiani, Jim O'Rourke, Chili Gonzalez, Letitia Sadier, Ghost Poet, Cozy Funny Tootie, Graham Coxon, and Sleaford Mods. And today, on the show, musician, singer, composer, pianist, Hania Rani. My book, Coming to Berlin, is available in all good bookshops or via the publisher's website, Velocity Press, and Lost and Sound now exists as a Substack, where I regularly post updated little bits about the podcast, about writing, about creativity, all sorts of stuff going on down there. So if that's your bag, there's a link in the podcast description. Give it a subscribe if that's your type of thing. So I'm coming to you from a super hot Berlin. It's weird. I'm quite tired today because last night, although it's really hot now, there was the most fucking mental thunderstorm. It just ripped through the sky and it went on most of the night. And it was just like the loud, I don't know. I mean, I think like growing up English, we kind of used to sort of mild bad weather, but this was like something else. And looking at people's Instagram feeds this morning, it seems that I wasn't the only person in noticing how super loud. It was like heavy metal. It was like the biggest heavy metal concert out of thunder, ripping it down across the Kreuzberg skyline. But yes, still I'm here. It's really, really, really hot now. And, today on the show, Hania Rani. Now, eagle-eared listeners, you who maybe have been with the podcast for quite a while, if you've been with the podcast quite a while, you might remember that she was a guest on the show a couple of years back. But that was at a really weird time. It was like when we spoke initially, it was during lockdown. That time that feels like such a long time ago now, and feeling. We were all in like the confines of our spaces, or most of us anyway. And we had a really great chat at the time. And at the time, her second album, Home, had just come out, or it had been out for just a little while. And something about that album really resonated with me at the time. It was like spectral. It was haunting. It was ambient, and she kind of mixed piano with her voice with orchestral flourishes and electronic touches. And it sort of suited that sort of mood of the time where we lived in a kind of like beatless world for a while. Like you couldn't go out dancing. There was no sort of external energy. We were all in our individual little bubbles, and the sort of ambience of her music and other artists as well. I remember really, really discovering like Kamaru at that time, for example, and Space Africa, took on like this extra dimension that I don't think was definitely probably wasn't the intention of the artists. Like, for example, Hania's album Home that really resonated with me at the time was made before the pandemic. But, you know, also that episode was actually the highest rated, the most amount of listeners for any episode of Lost and Sound. So it felt really good to come back and have a chat with her 2 years later from when we originally had a chat, and just sort of find out what's been going on. Like, in terms of what she's done, like her career has just like accelerated. It was already big, but it's massively accelerated. There was a YouTube video concert of her playing in Paris last year, which has racked up something like 4.5 million views. She's recorded a soundtrack. She's recorded her own compositions for the esteemed Deutsche Grammophon label, and now she's made this new album called Ghosts, which is that sort of, I get the feeling when I listen to it, it's the sound of an artist really, really, really opening up and exploring and being brave and bold and going forward. And it, to me, I couldn't help, oh no, it's probably not there, but reading in a sort of end of lockdown metaphor that suddenly the world opens back up, and that's reflected in this album that she's done now. It's the most surprising thing about it is it sounds like her, but it's just accelerated up into this full double album with lots of synth, lots of, it's even got grooves on it. Like the track Hello, which is already out now as a single, really surprised me. It just sounds so naturally her, yet it, at the same time, it's got a groove, it's got a shuffle, and there's this sort of jazzy, sort of 70s sort of cosmic kind of vibe to how I hear it anyway. But either way, the album's not out until October, and it's on the Fantastic Gondwana label. But yeah, it was really, really great to catch up with Hania again in a totally different kind of circumstances from when we first spoke, you know. And this is what happened.
Yeah, so how are you doing? How are things going?
Well, I'm good. In general, I'm probably just preparing to my album release, and obviously the tour, which will be probably the most intense in my life. It's really long and very exciting, obviously, as well, because we'll be playing in a very beautiful venues, but it still needs, you know, some preparation. So I have now time off, but basically I'm just about to go to my studio after this talk and start to work. So but it's a nice, exciting time for me.
That's excellent. So you sort of mentioned about it being quite intense. Is that like because it's longer and you're going to more places than you'd usually go to?
Yes, we are going just in Europe. It's a full month. And we go with a nightliner, so it's just really almost playing every day with little breaks. And I did quite a lot of touring in my life, but this seems like very compact and intense. And then we go for 3 weeks in US and Canada. And there is just like 2 weeks break before that. So basically I'll be touring from beginning of October till middle of December, which is quite a lot, but obviously also very grateful and hopefully, we want to bring, you know, a very special show. So we are preparing not only when it comes to sound, but also to like visual side and lights, and the whole team is very motivated. So it will be very, very different, definitely.
Yeah, it's interesting because since we last spoke, when we spoke, it was a very, very peculiar time in history as well. And, you know, it was still a pandemic, it was still lockdowns and stuff. And then since then, you know, like listening to the new album Ghosts, and also looking at the stuff you've done since, like particularly the concert in Paris that I think has now racked up something like 4.5 million views on YouTube. It feels like you've taken some really big steps, like in a lot of ways. Like it feels like in terms of the sound you're embracing now, it feels like there is a sort of, at least in terms of how I hear it, like a really conscious move to, or maybe or natural move to kind of step out, you know, which is, I feel, the feeling that we all had after the pandemic. But I was wondering for you, you know, since we last spoke, what the kind of process was for you to get to where you are with Ghosts and kind of sort of stepping out and embracing maybe more textures and sounds in your work?
Yeah, so actually, for me, this time of pandemic was actually really prolific because I started to work really intensively on music scores for movies, especially. I think it was just during pandemic that I did my first score, maybe just tiny bit before, and afterwards, like, people started to, you know, see me more as well as this kind of composer. And so basically during these 3 years, I was very much focused on, I mean, I was working quite a lot, but what is interesting is not that I was working mostly on different projects, starting from music scores and also like some collaborative records, which is, for example, the records for Deutsche Grammophon with Dobrava Čoher. And I think, you know, I think this very often allows you to investigate a little bit more the areas that you would be a little bit maybe usually afraid of, or maybe a little bit, you know, they would sound a little bit too courageous when it comes, of course, to just my personal story. So it's kind of a safe ground for exploration and for discovering new things. And I think I just had a lot of luck that I was working with very inspiring people, and they were really pushing me to just investigate new sounds. And I think this was a crucial and like kind of a key element when it comes to my development. And also, like, obviously I was having in mind that the third album should happen soon and I should like start to work on it. But obviously, you know, you cannot really plan it. It just needs to happen. You just need to have a little bit of space in your in your life, in your agenda. And then the first song is happening. And the first kind of, for me, it's obviously also very often simply the main idea, which for me were Ghosts, as the title says. And this started to open in me many, many, many different subjects that I was trying to research, and then the sound was following I think this research. So I just was working all the time doing things with different people, with different sound engineers, which is also very important, because at Ghost you have like so many sound engineers that I was working with, and so many just people contributing, even in, you know, in the very little part. Also, I myself recorded quite a lot of things, so it's a very different album. It's probably, you know, it's also recorded in a different way. I even the recording process, the process of creating songs was different, just because I already managed to kind of maybe establish my own style of working, which allows me, because what is interesting for me obviously is just to kind of cross my own, you know, boundaries and cross my own patterns of thinking. So in order to achieve it, I'm trying to think to pick the tools that things unfamiliar, or to pick the way the things that feels unfamiliar in a way, for example, in the context of my music education, which was very classical, it was very much about composed music, you know, very much like prepared and thought music. So I was trying just to think how to make this music different, because, you know, everyone is able to reach different music, but you need tiny bit different steps to take, I think.
So do you feel like it sounds from what you were saying, you know, you were following your intuition, and there was also a sort of series of opportunities that kind of allowed you to sort of step into a slightly different frame with it?
Yeah, I think the very important things for me were basically to maybe in a more brave way process the sound and process different kind of sounds. Also, like, base my composing process, not on piano, but maybe on synthesizers, or maybe just on my voice, or maybe just on the rhythm, like as a first basic element. So this already kind of change the balance and dynamics in between. Yeah, even like to start the composing process from different perspectives, taking as a bass instrument, different instrument, is already kind of change the dynamics between these instruments and you know, the role that they were playing. And afterwards, obviously, there are like some very important choices when it comes to album. Am I doing it alone, or maybe I'm as well doing it with other artists? I'm inviting them to a composing process with whom I'm mixing, because I producing is one thing. And although I was not planning to produce this album, but in the end I produced it. But then the mixing engineer was also like a very difficult choice, and I had a huge luck to start to work with Greg Freeman, who contributed to this album so much, and he managed to kind of put all of these different and very elusive stories together in just one whole cohesive thing. So I would say it was quite, you know, at some point it was intuition, because you ask about it, but on the other hand it was like very deliberate choices how to make things different, how to try to and this is actually coming from my scoring experience, because obviously the music that you have inside of you, it's more or less the same, I would say, it's developing, but it's always your sensitivity is quite the same. But then what you can always change is just arrangement, you know, and the same chords played on the different instruments, or played on synthesizers, or maybe played, you know, or digital instruments, will make the music sound totally different, have a totally different mood than played on, I don't know, string quartet or piano. So this was always kind of my first question when I was getting a commission to compose a score: what is like the arrangement, what instruments are playing, and basically they were defining as well the mood of the soundtrack and you know, the color of it. So I tried to follow this idea also on my album, and actually I was very limited. My like instruments are quite limited when you really count them, but then they are really kind of researched deeply.
So in a way, it's kind of like, the way I interpret it, it's a little bit like if the songs, or if like songs are like people, like the way we kind of treat it is like who we are in ourselves, like in how we think and our mind and our soul. But like the arrangement is like how we have our haircut and, you know, the clothes we wear, maybe.
Yeah, I think so. That's maybe... a good comparison. And it's very interesting, because if you really just look at the structure and look like harmonies, very often acoustic music has a very kind of like pop harmonies, you know, if you translate it into different language, let's say of like electronic music, it would just sound like electronic music piece. So it's like instruments and arrangement and elements that you're picking, I think are really, really ultimately defining the music, kind of.
Yeah, and I'm listening to it as well, like there were so many surprises when I listened to it, like listening to Hello, and it's got this kind of groove to it, you know, and then I kind of wrote down a list of words when I was listening to it, like, and they're just things like, you know, just as I have a notepad and just writing like cosmic and deep and hypnotic, and I also wrote 1970s on there, because like for some reason it reminded me of also because the album's really long as well, and I read that you set out to make like a double album. It reminded me of these, you know, like a lot of the albums that I'd used to listen to or still go back to, like Miles Davis, Bitches Brew, or you know, the sort of big the Floyd albums as well, you know, just in a very abstract way, that it's got that kind of deep sort of woody analog sort of feel to it, you know, that I think what I'm trying to say is that kind of reminds me of something that when we spoke last time that you know, we talked about like that you'd also, you know, you also like published books of the sheet music. And so I had this kind of feeling when listening to the album that it reminded me of these albums that I love from the 70s, that it sort of feels very contained, you know, like you're reading a book, like, you know, like you're going into a kind of an environment that's closed off, you know. And I was wondering if that's really important to you to kind of create like a contained space with your work.
Yes, and I really enjoy long albums myself. Mm-hmm. And also the albums that could feel as a like live concert album. Mm. You know, that it could be actually also even the order that I'm creating, probably it's not very reasonable when it comes to, you know, I know like right now what's happening in like streaming platforms, that you need to always include the best songs in the beginning, but I just feel, you know, you just need to start the smooth start, and then you just really need to get into this world, which with in Ghost it's quite, I would say, yeah, quite peculiar. It's a little bit haunted. It's very dark sometimes. It's full of, you know, moments. It even have like a little stop in the middle. It, as you said, it could be a start all over again. But this is, yeah. And also I felt with third album, I can go a bit crazy. And I know that maybe with second album, nobody would really allow me to do. But with the third album, you know, I was dreaming about having like this 11-minute track. This is for me, you know, this is something that I'm enjoying myself, listening to music. I just love like this long track that you can really immerse into. And I felt I can do it now. I am allowed.
You've earned your stripes.
Yeah.
and like, I mean, also, you sort of mentioned about Ghosts, and the album is called Ghosts. And I was wondering what... The theme of Ghosts, how that developed and what that's about for you.
Yeah, so I'm very interested in themes that are very kind of open, and they are like a keys to many doors, and obviously it was very present in Home, because it's like such a almost like, you know, one of these very classic stories about leaving home and returning to it, or like a place, or there were so many references also in the culture. This interests me a lot because I like to take something that is so familiar to everyone, but then obviously I have my own ways and my own doors to open and my own kind of, you know, references to this, and this feels always like kind of a good space to be, which is important because I think a lot when I compose music, I think a lot about the space that I want people to be. And with Ghosts, it was also connected to the moment because I was renting a studio in a very remote place. In Swiss mountains, I was working on a music for a documentary about Alberto Giacometti, Swiss artist coming from this region. And I rented a studio in like art residency. And it was very different place from my usual environment because I usually live in a city and you know, obviously I love nature, but it's not something that I know so well. And I almost never lived really in the nature. So this very remote, a little bit spooky place, because the art residency used to be like an old sanatorium, like a retreatment place that was so popular in the end of 19th and beginning of 20th century. People going there for like, you know, because of health reasons, but also sometimes they were also like dying there, almost like, you know. So it was like already so full of stories and so full of, I don't know, references and history of the place, and something very almost like, you know, tangible. And that I follow this because I was, you know, I was there for maybe 2-3 months even for the first time. Then I returned, but it was like very condensed and it was very almost like a visible feeling. So I just kind of started to think about it. And Ghost is a topic that actually really interests me because I am as well quite interested in general, like in like spiritual things, but also like how other different cultures are interpreting, you know, the fine line between life and death, and how they come to, they kind of try to explain this from religious, but also non-religious, like very secular perspective. And and I just felt this is a great time because I'm just actually in a place that feels almost like, you know, haunted, or haunted with stories. It's not like in a scary way, but just haunted with things like, you know, memories and some kind of legacy. And this was just the starting point, because once I started to as well and look deeper into this, first of all, I was really interested as well to deal myself with such ultimate things like life and death, and how I can imagine them, you know. Obviously with art it's a safe ground, and you can do it in a very kind of elusive and abstract way, but still I felt I really want to touch something very meaningful for me, or almost difficult. And then also like ghosts, it's always about listening to other people's stories or some gossips or myths, or, you know, like not only to what you experience, but also what you heard or what you can maybe imagine, which also was very important for me when it comes to narratives and stories that I wanted to say. Even, you know, going to like a very current perspective, which I thought ghosting in a current way, that, for example, we all have like little ghosts, little avatars in the social media, and which are becoming kind of our alter egos, and, you know, living in a very automated way, sometimes not really being reflective about what's going on, also like kind of makes us ghosts in a little bit different way, but still like not being grounded or not feeling fully, you know, living. So and all of these little references and this little kind of, I don't know, my interests were followed with music, and it's such a wonderful topic, ghosts and anything that is like a little bit, you know, unreal. Fantastic. It's always such a great area when it comes to music, because it also allows you to think out of the box, out of any kind of, you know, musical borders, and especially for me, because I'm kind of composing, you know, quite soft and very composed music, it allowed me to a little bit move forward and maybe investigate sounds that sounds, you know, they're a bit weird or are peculiar, and I think just allowed me to be more courageous.
You sort of mentioned how ghosts are interpreted differently in different countries and different parts of the world. Like you were born in Gdansk in Poland. Yeah. And what was the sort of what were you kind of born into in terms of like people's views on ghosts? You know, was there like a strong belief around the supernatural or life after dead, or, you know, were there memories that you kind of feel about that?
Yes, definitely. Also, like, interestingly, we have one of the books that we are, as a kid, you are always like reading at school, is about, so we have like this, it was written in 19th century, in this like romanticism times, and it's about like this day of ghosts. I mean, it's called Day of Ghosts, which was a little bit like probably mixture of pagan and like Slavic beliefs and already like you know, Christian beliefs in Poland, and it was basically kind of trying to connect with some spirits, with some ghosts, and this is, you know, like a poetry. It's a bit like a Polish Shakespeare book that we have to read. And I just remember once working on this album that it was such a powerful impact on me, because that it was something very interesting, and he was imagining, it's a really wonderful work of art, that it's like ghosts are kind of not ready, you know, to get out of the word. So that's why they are kind of stuck in this like transparent, as it is transparent, haunted creatures, because they were not ready to die. And it really interests me, and I just kind of stuck. And one of the actually the songs is kind of imagining this process, becoming a ghost and being not ready to die. And there is like a very imagined moment of talking with death a little bit in one of the songs that I composed. And obviously I come from the country that religion is still very present, but also, you know, a country that is like so much about like also pagan beliefs and like this Slavic culture, which was very, in a very funny way, just at some point connecting and being kind of even incorporated to, you know, like Catholic religion. And then you can just see traces of it. And then obviously I was also very quickly moving to Japanese culture, which because I'm also very interested in it, and also their perspective in ghosts are actually really present everywhere, and there are good and bad ghosts, and they even in their very, I would say, secular society, they still believe in spirit, that they are just present everywhere. So that, and also like I was quite really inspired years ago already, reading, you know, books by Murakami, where he's almost explaining this or like describing this hyper-real world. And then just including there like ghosts, which are like a part of this very contemporary, you know, world. So this interested me, because I'm not really interested maybe in a like romantic way of describing and the depicting ghosts as I don't know, some spooky creatures or something that, yeah, is kind of a monster. I'm just more kind of want to grasp it as a memory, as a story, as something that maybe, you know, it's kind of like something that was before us, or like just a part of reality, because we all need to face the death, and you know, we are trying to deal with it in a very personal way, but ghosts are very, very close to this topic, and this maybe allows us to think a little, or like to look a little bit closer what actually it means to me, you know, to die, or what is really the difference between life and death. And maybe ghosts are like a little bit like a symbol of this research, and yeah,
maybe like a kind of connecting point between what we know and what we don't, maybe,
or like our human way of imagining it. Yeah
definitely. I always notice, like, in a way, you know, the music is full of ghosts, and like a lot of the art we have is full of ghosts, just in terms, like, you know, you put on a record, listen to a piece of music, and there's an actual recording of something that happened sometime before, you know. And like, particularly, I get this a lot when I'm watching films as well, when, you know, obviously films date perhaps more than music in a way, you know, like good music sort of feels timeless to me. It might sort of sound like, you can sort of tell that it was made in the 70s or the 80s, but it still sort of transports me in a very at the moment way. So maybe music's a better example to talk about, but you're still thinking like, it could be a piece of music that was made 50 or 60 years ago. Maybe many people involved have now died, but they're actually in the room, you know, like the sound is, you can, you know, like particularly when you can hear the actual, the way it's been recorded or something, it's quite weird, isn't it? The way things are kind of transported like ghosts through music.
Yeah, I feel it as well. I think also, yeah, it's especially music is such an elusive thing, right? So I feel there is a lot about like moment and spirit and capturing something that you almost felt, you know, that it would just vanish, right? And at some point it's there forever.
yeah definitely. And what were your kind of processes with, like, I mean, how do you sort of feel that your process has changed in terms of kind of just pure creativity in the last few years? Do you feel, I mean, you're talking about the third album and like now it's like that time where you sort of felt kind of confident to sort of step into pushing the box a little bit or moving things around a bit. Do you feel like you're internally or you've learned or changed much in terms of when you kind of get down to just starting an idea?
I hope that I learned. Definitely, I don't maybe trust myself so much anymore, in a way that I don't trust maybe like the first ideas. I know that many ideas can be pushed quite a lot to a very different direction. And it's good as well, in a way, like trusting yourself is like you have a plan and you have, you imagine something. But sometimes, I mean, we are always like working with a very living materials. So I rather see what's there and I'm trying, even if it means like kind of deconstructing my whole plan. I feel you always need to, in the end, choose things that feels really, really right. But they are somehow, I mean, I'm in a way, I think you just need to, or what I feel like is, I'm always kind of working with physical objects, almost if you can call like this the sound, but something that we record or we recorded and, you know, just the result of it. And I'm sometimes actually need to leave the basic, the you know, the first ideas and move towards something that I have in front of me and really follow this. For example, I remember when we are recording some, we are supposed to record double bass and actually as well Moog, and we rented a really, really good studio, and in the end I was not playing the double bass, but my friend that I'm also touring with right now, and he even didn't touch the double bass because it was just not fitting, you know. We prepared everything, we prepared all the mics and the setup, but in the end it was just Moog, which actually could be recorded kind of anywhere because yeah, and this is something that I'm really enjoying. And then afterwards, even if the song is there, I think it's sometimes if you feel like there is missing something, obviously, once I finish my album, I hate it for a while.
Yeah.
But once doing a song and you feel like there is something really missing there still, it's good to really even, you know, move it around and just change it totally, like take ending, put in the beginning, because maybe it's something that this missing element you can really kind of, you know, find. So just not to give up too quickly, and probably this is maybe so just not to be too serious about yourself, because obviously when I'm very involved in the recording process, because I'm singing, I'm playing the piano, I'm playing most of the synths, and most of the things are made by myself. So you can also be, you know, it needs a little bit of courage as well to say, okay, maybe this is actually not the best idea, and maybe you should just do something else. Yeah.
I think that's really inspiring to hear, because it's like there's this sort of thing where you also have like a kind of a relationship with the public, and you know your music is successful, and so there must be this impetus of feeling like there's already this identity about what you do, you know. And obviously like an album like Ghosts pushes that, moves that on, but to you know to have this kind of, I guess it's, I don't know if it's hubris or if that's the right word, but this idea that there's already a perception of who you are and what you do, and so to keep moving on and to keep creating and to keep pushing yourself, you have to do these things you describe, or, you know, is that's an important process to do the things you described, so that you know that you're getting the best possible result out of your work that is based on the work, not on based on like you know, this is the latest piece of music because it's what people expect you to do. Is it important to detach yourself from your public persona?
Yeah, I guess I'm really working on it very hard for a couple of years to just really prove that my music is really difficult to define. And sometimes I really just do something just like piano solo, and sometimes I just sing, and sometimes it just synthesizes. It was very important for me just to embrace the fact that I'm a chaos. And this is probably the thing that people enjoy the most. And also, I think because I noticed like years ago that, for example, Radiohead very often is performing the songs that they are about to release in a couple of years, you know, way early. So just trying them out. And this is what I'm very often doing as well, trying out my new songs with the audience and seeing, and very often these songs are growing during my shows, or maybe they are just kind of like, you know, maybe I'm adding a new outro or intro to it, and this outro afterwards become a separate composition. So I know one thing that, I mean, artists and the artists that I admire, they're always changing and always developing, and usually it's not the most comfortable they are developing it. They're trying to actually leave the familiarities, and they are trying to evolve, because I think this is the only way. I still think I'm doing it in a very soft way. I would like to be even more courageous, but everyone has, you know, different timings and different way of doing it. But I think as well, people already got used to it, that I'm just so proposing different things and also used to in a way that they maybe even anticipate something like this from me. And obviously there will be some people who say, oh, why it's so, you know, sometimes I'm playing, very often I'm playing the shows that are like standard shows, which I really admire, because I think people actually are more focused, because you cannot just so easily, you know, see them, listen in a little bit not maybe present way, but some people are really like kind of complaining about it. But I feel I'm so there on the stage, so I really want people as well to be there, and this music also can make you, you know, move or feel like you want a little bit to immerse in it, a bit different than just sitting. I am definitely sometimes probably bringing my audience to not a very comfortable places, both when it comes to space or when it comes to music. But I think this is how we both grow.
Yeah, I like the way you sort of bring your audience in with that, you know, like you both grow. And what would you tell your younger self? You know, if you could go back to you just at the part of your life where you were just starting to make music or starting to think about wanting to make music, or, you know, what would you tell yourself now?
Oh, I really kind of admire my younger self, because I was very, I was restless, and I was very courageous. I was kind of very in a good way, naive, you know. I didn't know that things are so difficult, and this made me, I don't know, send a demo to my record label or just send hundreds of mails to people just to, I don't know, organize my show. And I think that was great. I mean, obviously, I think I would love to back then compose more complex and more liberated music, but it was probably impossible, because, you know, I was studying classical music for 20 years, and I was coming from very like composed structures and, you know, very organized and logic form. So it takes a lot of time and thinking how to get rid of them. On the other hand, now this year I composed my first piano concerto for a symphony orchestra. And I mean, without the classical education, I would be not able to do it. So I'm also, for example, very interested in this area, and I'm really happy to see that, and it's slowly opening for me, and I'm actually back to classical music, but from the very, very different perspective as well. Already now, as a like performing artist, and artist who's also improvising a lot on stage, or using different kind of instruments, or maybe like, you know, a little bit crossing the border of what sound is it actually. So, I like my younger self, although at debut, I mean, I was a very old, you know, debutant somehow, beginner, because I released my first album, solo album, Essia, when I was 29. So it's a very, very kind of late start. But it probably took me a little bit longer than other artists.
I mean, I remember once Tom York once saying that every time he finished an album, he would go like, oh, that's not the album I thought I wanted to make. And then about a year later, he would go, actually, he'd listen to it again and go, actually, that's exactly the album I wanted to make, you know. But it's funny you're saying about that, the kind of like, you know, going back to the concerto, you know, but you have to go through all of that education and experience, and almost like we reject things, but they come back to us in a way that we like sometimes, don't they?
Yeah, and with albums, it's always, I also feel like to make a solo album, especially, it's like mirror, you know. I have like this plan about the new album, which is usually very unrealistic, and then it's just a mirror. You are getting the mixes, or maybe the moment when you are delivering the stems to mix, and this is what it is. You can see, you know, there is. Everything is very saying, like, honestly, who you are right now. And this is also amazing. I mean, it's sometimes it's a bit cruel.
Yeah, as mirrors can be sometimes.
Yeah, but also I always think, even when I listen to my, you know, very old tracks, which sounds extremely naive, but this is also like amazing mirror of the process, you know, and you can just really see where I was starting and how this was developing and where I am now. So it was also me, and I'm not very embarrassed about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess it's like, you know, you have those photos, you know, like those things where someone takes a photo of the same thing every day for their life, and then so you kind of have this kind of evolution, you know, so the things that we've done in the past that, you know, we would maybe do slightly differently now, they sort of evolve out of, you know, what we do now evolves out of everything we've done before, doesn't it?
Yeah, totally.
Hania, thank you so much for chatting with me today. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, so that was me, Paul Hamford, talking with Hania Rani. And we had that conversation. Oh, what day was it? It was yesterday we had that conversation, whatever day that was. But anyway, Ghosts, the album is released on October the 6th on Gondwana Records. Thank you so much, Hania, for chatting with me there. Lost and Sound is proudly sponsored by Audio Technica. Audio Technica are a global but still family-run company that make headphones, turntables, cartridges, microphones, studio quality yet affordable products, because they believe that high-quality audio should be accessible at all. The music that you hear at the beginning, at the end of every episode of Lost and Sound is by Thomas Giddens. If you want to check out more of his stuff, there's a link to his Instagram on the podcast description. My book, Coming to Berlin, is available in all good bookshops, specialist bookshops, that is, and via the publisher Velocity Press's website. If you like my writing as well as this podcast and you haven't checked it out already, give a little check out, maybe even a subscribe if you like, to my Substack as well, link in the podcast description. Anyway, I hope whatever you're doing today, this evening, this morning, whenever you're listening to this, is really peachy and lovely and special. And I'll chat to you soon.